Hello, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell, and welcome to the Freedom Writers Podcast. Today's show is an intriguing look at the ongoing war in the Ukraine by two Ukrainians currently living in America. My first conversation features Lenny Steinberg, one of the co-founders of UkraineNeedsYou.org, an impressive mental health nonprofit that provides services to those affected by the current conflict. Lenny makes a passionate plea about what you can do to help support their efforts. Following Lenny's contribution to those impacted by the conflict, we are joined by a Ukrainian member of our Freedom Rider family, Lawrence Bizinevier. Lawrence's parents escaped the former Soviet Union, but instilled in him and his siblings a profound respect for their people and their culture. This episode is a heart-wrenching look at the human cost of conflict, and I hope it will leave you feeling enlightened and empowered to make a difference. When Ukraine was first attacked on February 24th, 2022, many people feared that Russia would seize the capital in Kiev and try to capture the rest of the country. However, nearly 9 months later, Ukrainians are still fighting and pushing back against the Russian invaders. This war has been devastating for the Ukrainian people. According to the United Nations Commissioner for Human Rights, over 6,300 civilians have been killed, with another 9,600 civilians injured. In August of 2022, the Ukrainian government estimated that approximately 9,000 members of their armed forces have been killed in action. The Center for Strategic and International Studies also found that over 10 million Ukrainians have fled their homeland, with another 7 million displaced within Ukraine as of October 3rd, 2022. But the damage done goes far beyond the physical losses. The mental toll of the conflict has been immense and is often overlooked. That's where our guest, Lenny Steinberg, comes in. Lenny has spent the past 9 months fighting for the people of Ukraine. When Russia invaded his home country, Lenny jumped into action and co-founded UkraineNeedsYou.org, a nonprofit dedicated to providing mental health support to those affected by the conflict. He and his colleagues use their voice and their platform and have helped raise awareness and support for the ongoing crisis in Ukraine. Lenny and his colleagues' compassion is something we can all learn from, and how we can help those who are suffering. Their message is one that we need to hear now more than ever. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Lenny Steinberg. On February 24th, 2022, the world changed. And for the last 6 months and counting, this gentleman has used his entire well-being to help the well-being of others. Our guest today, Lenny Steinberg, is going to talk about the psychological trauma and the mental health trauma that this horrific attack on his homeland, Ukraine, has caused in so many people's lives. So, Lenny, I'm so inspired by your activism and that you and your beautiful colleagues have created a nonprofit, UkraineNeedsYou.org, and that you are putting doctors in contact with people who have trauma. So I'd like to welcome you to our podcast and introduce you to our audience that is in hundreds of countries around the world. And I'd like you to talk about this sense of the urgency of now.
Thank you, Erin. I'm so honored to be here with you. Yeah, the now is now. I mean, the war is still raging. The latest news is that Putin has called up 300,000 Russian people to join the military by force, and the war is still raging. I think as of today, it's annexed 4 regions of Ukraine with referendums in the country. So the war is still there. I don't think the war is going anywhere, unfortunately. And what we're specifically focusing on is the mental health aspect of this war. And that's often overlooked in conflict zones, especially in Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine is a country that's seen its fair share of war and battles. And I think the population in Ukraine definitely needs mental health services, and that's what we're trying to solve.
Lenny, I think what makes this interview so poignant to me is you are Ukrainian, but when you were born, Ukraine was part of what was considered the USSR. So for our listeners who have not studied the complexities of your homeland, can you speak about what that was like to be a young boy who was born in the now former Soviet Union?
You know, it's funny, before this war, before 7 months ago, asking who I was, what was my identity, the answer was always the same. I'm a Russian Jew. That's what I've known my entire life, is I'm from Russia or the former USSR, and I'm Jewish. You know, my first language was Russian. I eat Russian food, been exposed to Russian culture, Russian music. And growing up in Ukraine, I'm from Odessa on the Black Sea. If you look at the history of the USSR at that time, there's a lot of Jews that were in the USSR that were called refuseniks. You know, ever since the 1970s, these Russian Jews have been trying to get out of Russia. And the funny thing is, well, trying to get out, and Russia wouldn't allow them to get out. They banned for them to leave. And they just wanted to leave. They wanted to go to Israel. They wanted to go to America. They wanted to go anywhere except Russia because of all the anti-Semitism that was going on. So the irony is, they hated the Jews that were living inside Russia, but they also didn't want them to leave, right? But eventually, what happened is, when the Berlin Wall came down to Germany, and that part of communism started collapsing, and finally, Gorbachev at the time was finally able to start dialogue with the American counterparts, and they finally said, okay, we're going to open up our borders for the Russian Jews to leave this country. And that's when I think there was a million, maybe 2 million Russian Jews that actually were able to get out. And a lot of them went to Israel. A lot of them went to America. My dad and that side of the family ended up going to Israel. My mom and I ended up in America, in Brooklyn, New York, to be more specific. And growing up, I always knew that I was a Russian Jew. But then when this war broke out, it was really mind-boggling to me that there was like Russian-speaking people going into Ukraine and attacking and killing other Russian-speaking people. It was just like, before that, you speak the same language, the same food, you have the same cultures, you're literally neighbors of people, and now the same people are trying to wipe you off the map. It's just, it's mind-boggling how just history repeats itself, right? So that's the sad part about this whole thing, is like, it's the same culture, same people, same language, so many generations and years. And that's why it hit so close home to me and my partners, because we're from there, right? So I remember when this war first started, I just wanted to see what the Russian media is feeding its own people. So I would just turn on like a streaming service to see what like Moscow 24 say. And it was just like complete opposite of what we were hearing here in the United States.
Propaganda and misinformation.
Specific propaganda in the native language. And it's sad because that population, they're being fed that. And the region is so close and tied together that you could have somebody in Moscow, but your grandma could be living in Ukraine, or vice versa. You could be living in Ukraine and your grandma's in Moscow. And it's like, now your grandma in Moscow is being fed lies about where you're living. And it's like mind-boggling that he's able to convince his own population of what he's doing is trying to, quote unquote, liberate Ukraine.
Lenny, I love that you and your colleagues realize that people are hurting now in the dead of night. And in that hurting, psychologically, with the fear and the depression, you and your colleagues had the foresight of saying, we got to do something now to help parents, to help children, to help soldiers, and to help women who have suffered from sexual abuse at the hands of Russian soldiers. So, Lenny, can you talk about this brainchild that you had to start Ukraine Needs You, and how our listeners can be a part of helping you during the urgency of now?
Really, the genesis was when this war started back on February 24th, I remember talking to Irene Heider and Alina Dravkin. It felt like we had to do something, because it felt like really personal, right? So we were like, okay, we're going to raise money. We're going to just reach out to our network of people that we know, friends, family, other Ukrainians that came to this country. There's a big Russian community here in LA, New York, and Chicago, and Florida. There's just big communities of ex-Soviet immigrants that are here. And we're like, we could raise some money to figure out how do we help Ukrainian people. And food and medical supplies and clothes, all that was being covered already by like big NGOs that are on the ground, that they have full networks and logistics in place for stuff like this. So we thought, what's the other missing piece that these people are going to need? And mental health is going to be a big issue, just because if you think about, you know, any time of war, there's the effects of war is going to definitely affect the population, not just physically, but mentally, right? If you're living in a war zone and you have rockets flying over your head, you're going to have a hard time sleeping at night, right? You're going to have a hard time going with the day to day in life. And even in America, you know, mental health is an issue that we're all finally starting to talk about it. In Ukraine, Like, I think their solution to mental health is a bottle of vodka. And we were just really lucky to find an organization on the ground in Ukraine who happened to providing psychological services for the war. And that connected to Irene and her network. And we said, okay, like, let us raise money for you guys to at least keep your operations going. Because you guys already have a network of patients that you can help in before the war. We're pretty sure those patients are going to need help as well, even if they're refugees at this point. You know, we live in an era of Zoom, so let's do it virtually. So we quickly purchased UkraineZoom.com as a way for people to quickly go and find a resource, right? So UkraineZoom.com is literally where they go to connect with a doctor. And we set up weekly sessions, and each session is an hour long, and they're group sessions. And when we started with like 5 or 6 doctors, and then eventually doctors found out that we're doing this, because at the end of the day, like, really what we're doing is keeping their livelihood alive, right? For Ukrainian citizens or refugees, the service is 100% free. Nobody takes a dime from them. And then everything that we've raised so far is 100% donated to these doctors. So I think they're going to need these services for years to come. I don't see this ending. You know, if the war ends today, these mental health services, they're going to linger on with this population for years, for generations to come. So, like, that's why we want to focus on it.
So when you decided that you were going to work in that mental health space, how did you initially find the doctors? That was probably the most important thing, is we've got to get doctors who were there, who, as bombs are falling and Wi-Fi is taken out, have the ability to find electricity, to find a safe space, and be able to connect with other people who are also in that dangerous space of losing an apartment or even losing their lives.
Everything kind of happened really just like a domino effect. Like, okay, we raised the money. Like, now who do we give it to? And like, Irene had a connection to a doctor on the ground in Odessa. He had a neurological center, and he was literally the one that someone was like, I have to shut down my practice because of this war. They were like, hold up, maybe we have a solution for it. And then he had another 3 doctors on payroll. And then some other doctors found out that we're doing this. And then a few doctors had already left the country and became refugees themselves, like in Amsterdam or in Spain. But they needed an income. So like, we kind of like started scraping the money together that we raised on our own for Blue Check. It was like $7,000. But, you know, $7,000 is a lot of money. Right? You got to think about their average salary is about $200 a month, US dollars. So what we did is we're like, okay, we're going to give you $22 an hour for your sessions to host. And for them, that was like way more money than they ever made. They were like, okay, we're on board. And then they were able to recruit all these other doctors, like basically people that with psychological degrees out there work, came together and said, okay, this is what we're doing. And basically every week they release a new schedule. It's a whole full week of sessions that people could join at any time during the times of posted. And it kind of snowballed from there. Like, after we were able to raise the 7,000, Harris Fishman got involved and said, hey, we're thinking about starting an organization with his buddy, Leah Schreiber, right? And that's when I started seeing like the amazing human side of people, that like, there's evil, but then there's these beautiful people that like come together just to help other people, strangers, people that they've never met in their lives, that they don't know who they are. They're just connected because they feel the pain that these people are feeling. Jason from Blue Check, his grandparents happen to be from Ukraine. So he feels that personal connection and he wanted to help. And like, watching people come together and trying to help in the beginning was just amazing. And it really inspired us, like me, Irene, and Farina, to keep this going. Because like, we only raised 7,000, so it wasn't that much money. It was just from friends and family. And then eventually when the Blue Check team came, they're like, really, you know, appreciate what you guys are doing. We really believe in what you guys are doing. We want to help you guys sustain this program for another 3-4 months. We were floored. I call Harris a mensch. He's a true definition of mensch, true definition.
Honey, I would never think about minimizing the first round of money you raised, because you raised it and attracted a Hollywood icon, which is how I met you. I went to an incredible event by Blue Check, a nonprofit founded by Leah Schreiber, who folks may know as Ray Donovan. And I stood and wept. I was just in awe of your passion, and I was just in awe of your purpose. And so can you tell our audience, what is your purpose?
It's been actually the same since day one. It's just to help people in Ukraine, like just to help fellow Ukrainians. We're seeing this as a long-term thing. We actually saw that Zelensky's wife started a national mental health initiative in Ukraine. I think it's amazing that they're like putting resources behind that. I think United 24 is one of the organizations that Zelensky has started to help raise funds for all this. And our goal is to just help as many Ukrainian people as possible with their mental health. I was never in the nonprofit or fundraising world before this. I was not in the mental health space before this. So for me, this has been a passion project that I started in February, and I could see it continuing on. And I have a 10-year-old son, and he's kind of seen what I'm doing, and he's very proud. And I didn't realize, like, my son is kind of seeing what I'm doing, and that's awesome. You know, like, for me, like, it's a huge win. Like, again, I think initially this was also for me to help with my own mental health, because of seeing all these images on the news. It was just driving nuts, like, literally seeing my city. People before this war, they didn't even know where Odessa was. Now, you know, they'll know Odessa from the Black Sea, beautiful city. And I don't know, for me, it was like really just to help with my own mental health. And then again, this just spiraled out of just people trying to come together and help, and really showed us the amazing, beautiful side of humans, that there's just way more good than evil out there. There really is. And I think, you know, the more good we do, the less evil there will be, you know?
What I love about your two co-founders is that Irene is from that space of sobriety and recovery. And your other colleague, Karina, is a former soldier, but she didn't fight for the USSR or for Russia or the Ukraine, but fought here as an American who immigrated from that part of the world. So can you talk about the importance of providing services to help with that PTSD and that trauma that follows and lingers well after they serve and sacrifice?
Karina is a total badass. She came to this country as a little girl and grew up in New York. And right after 9/11, when she saw what happened to her city, she was one of those people that decided, you know what, I'm actually going to go do something. And she joined the United States Navy and served in the Navy for 4 years. And Irene, literally, we're inside her treatment center today doing this podcast. She runs this amazing treatment center here in LA, where she's helping people get off drugs and come clean and put them in the home. So for me, I come from the marketing side of the world. I'm in marketing. I worked for an ad agency, so completely different, opposite ends of the spectrum. But we just kind of put our heads together and put our network together and started doing stuff from the soul. Like, the passion was there. And at the end of the day, we just came together with a lot of good people. I think that's what it is.
As you know, Lenny, we're recording this podcast in the midst of the Jewish high holidays. People celebrated Rosh Hashanah and the New Year, and in a few days we'll atone with Yom Kippur. So can you tell our audience the absurdity that Putin has told his soldiers that they are going to the Ukraine to fight the Nazis, especially when so many of the soldiers in the Ukraine are Jewish, lost family members to Nazis during the Holocaust, including the president of Ukraine?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, yeah, the fact that Zelensky is a Jewish guy is like, the irony of that is amazing. The Ukrainian people have an interesting relationship with the Jewish people also, if you think about it. You go back before even World War II, before World War I, you know, 1800s, you have a lot of pogroms that go on in Ukraine, right? A lot of Jewish people died in Ukraine before the war and during the war. But look, you know, the Jewish people have a pretty interesting history in the grand scheme of things, of human history as itself, right? We're always being persecuted, we're always being driven out. And the Russian Jews have been trying to get out of Russia, like I said, since the 70s. And a lot of them were able to get out. I call those the lucky ones. The lucky ones were able to get out in like the mid-70s, early 80s. They were able to leave and set up homes in America and Israel. And then the mass exodus really happened in 1989, 1991. That's when like millions and millions of Russian Jews left. And notice I'm calling them Russian Jews, not Ukrainian Jews, because that's what we were back then. We were literally Russian Jews. And this anti-Semitism was real. Like, my mom would tell me stories of how she would go for a job interview and they would ask to see your passport. And in the passport, it would say what religion you are. So as soon as she opened up a passport and it said Jew, oh, sorry, that position has been filled already. Oh, sorry, that position is no longer here, right? So like, it was real. Like, you wanted to get into a good university, you wanted to get into a good job, they would discriminate against you just because you were Jewish. So they wanted to leave. And USSR, the government, they didn't want them to leave. And finally, like I said, when that Berlin Wall came down, that was the first step of communism falling, right? And the options were go to Israel or you go to America. And during that time, Israel took in probably a couple of million Russian refugees, and America took in definitely a couple of million Russian refugees. So we all ended up in this country with the opportunities that this country allows. You know, we've all kind of set up home here and have families here now. But the connection to Russia and to Israel still, for me personally, remains strong because that's my identity. That's who I was as a person, right? And I think it'll stay there with me forever. And Israel is another kind of place that I consider like a second home as well.
As you know, the Freedom Riders have a beautiful family that includes a lot of the folks you talked about that were part of that mass exodus. And so I immediately thought of one of our family members who is an Auschwitz survivor, Renee Firestone, where she grew up is technically the Ukraine as well. And she was referencing a friend who did not come to America like she did. And she said, my friend survived Hitler, but Putin killed him. And that was just such a jarring idea that someone could survive the Holocaust and then die because of Putin's war. And do you consider this Putin's war?
I think it's definitely Putin's war. I think definitely a dictator. He's 30 years in the KGB. You can't discount those years, right? This is a scary guy. He clearly says what his intentions are, what he wants to do. He says it. He's not sugarcoating anything. He goes to his media and he tells his people what he's doing. Right? And he goes and does it. And I think
I'm glad you said that, Lenny, because the author Maya Angelou once said, if someone tells you who they are, believe them. And you're right. Yeah. Putin is always saying exactly what he's going to do. So do you think that people believe him?
I think people in Ukraine believe him because they have seen what he's done already in the last 7 months, right? He has not bluffed it over there. And I also think it feels slighted by the world that Russia has lost its place of power. Like he wants to hold USSR back. So there you go. Ukraine is the first country. That's why it's such a scary thing that's happening. It's like, what happens after Ukraine? So he took 15% this morning. What happens when he takes 50% and 60 and 100? What's the next country? That's the scary notion. Like, I don't think it stops with Ukraine. History is definitely repeating itself. It's scary times.
You mentioned earlier the referendum, Lenny, that many people around the globe are calling a sham election. So can you tell our audience what that referendum means to you? Because when I saw you a few weeks ago, there was this optimism in the air that Ukrainians were taking back territory and then this horrific referendum. Can you explain to our audience what 15% of Ukraine being confiscated yet again by Russia means to you?
It's basically the territory that he's been able to capture so far in that southern region of Kherson, Mariupol, around those areas, and Donetsk region, right? They've been able to capture those regions. And now what they're doing is putting their own quote unquote people in place, right? They're saying, this is the new government, this is the new mayor, this is the new city council. And from what I'm understanding, they're going door to door, armed, and asking people to vote right there. Like, as soon as they open up their door, you're voting with a gun to your head. The people that are voting, I don't think they have a choice. When you have a gun to your head, I think you're going to vote for whoever's pointing that gun at the top. But I think this is probably part of his plan the whole time. And I don't know, it's going to be interesting how the people react to all that. Because you have to not just have the people in power for you, but what about the regular people? How are they going to go about their day-to-day life with a Russian government in place now? So I don't know. It's going to be a very interesting winter, I guess. It's coming.
I want to be very realistic about the winter that is coming, the darkness that is imminent, and this war that is ravaging, and what that seasonal affective disorder will do to people that are still in Ukraine that will be affected by the winter, and what that does to people's psyche.
Ukraine winters are no joke. Those are very cold winters. I think their mental health is going to be constantly needed to be checked. It's a constant thing. That's why it's hard for us to say like this is just a wartime effort thing. I think it's going to last for generations to come after this war because it's going to linger. It stays with you. PTSD doesn't usually kick in until 6 months after an event. So people are not even experiencing PTSD yet because they're still in it. It's hard to experience something as far as PTSD because you're still in the war zone. You still have little rockets flying over your head and you're in bomb shelter. So the winter and spring and summer, it's going to be super critical just to continue, I think, providing the services, keeping these doctors paid and make sure that they're providing these services to their patients. Because a lot of these patients, they were with them before the war. So like, that's why the other thing we thought would be important is like to continue that level of service to provide to those same patients. Because those same patients probably need these doctors even more. And then, you know, all the new people that could benefit from this.
Lenny, I love that when you were describing your colleagues, you use the word badass. You too are a badass. But I think that's how a lot of us feel about Zelensky. I think we see him every day in his green military shirt. And yet he is motivating his people and challenging his opponent. So when you've seen Zelensky speaking to the world in English, Ukrainian, and Russian, are you inspired? And would you call him a badass?
Absolutely. From the first few weeks of this war, when he had the opportunity to get out, right? When he told the American people that I don't need a ride, I need ammo and I need weapons. Like, he's total badass. Very inspiring. And he used to be an actor, right? Like, if you look at his past, his background, like, very inspired. Like, that's a true democratic country, right? You could go from being an actor to a president. I think Reagan was an actor. So, like, it's kind of the same, right? You have a place where, like, your dreams could come true. His dream came true to be a president of a country that he loves and he was born in. And then he told the world he's not leaving. And the fact that he's Jewish, I mean, it's just the irony there is amazing. But yeah, I mean, the fact is, like, he's an amazing leader. He proved to the world what kind of leader he is. And I think to his own Ukrainian people, I think in the beginning, if you remember, everybody thought Ukraine was going to collapse overnight. Like, it's going to be wiped off in 2-3 weeks. And look how long he sustained this, right? It's the Ukrainian people that are fighting this war by themselves. There's, like, literally no help from anybody except a few weapons being shipped there. But, like, they're doing this all on their own. So it's incredible. It's inspiring. And I hope that they prevail. And, you know, I hope that they have a country of their own, because that's really what they want. You know, they're not the ones who attack Russia. They're just defending their homeland. So at the end of the day, like, they just want to be left alone and live in peace. And it's just, it's wild that they're even talking about this, because it's just literally history repeating itself. And we're witnesses to that now, right? We didn't grow up during World War I or II, learned about it in school. And now we're living through another war that soon kids are going to be learning about in school. Wars are never good, and that's sad.
Some of the imagery you shared with us, Lenny, I thought was just gripping, of seeing these dedicated doctors in a basement of a building, how they boarded it up and put mattresses up so they could not only be safe, but be able to connect with a client who might be in a basement of their own. And so can you talk about some of these brave doctors and how they're located throughout this country?
We have doctors in Odessa and Lviv and Kiev. We had doctors that came from Kharkiv, so they saw, like, the devastation that happened there. And then we do have a few doctors that actually came out of the country, became refugees. They ended up in Poland, Amsterdam. One is in Spain. And it's interesting, like, yeah, the doctors that are still in Ukraine, they found safe zones or safe villages to stay at. The good thing about our program, it's all via Zoom, so it's not a physical location. So, like, they could log in really from anywhere to provide services. But yeah, it's Irene and Karina, they have weekly calls with the doctors just to check in and figure out the schedule for the weekend. Yeah, sometimes it's sad because you'll hear a siren going off, or you'll see that the shades are down and they're in a safe room with a mattress by the window. It's not our reality, but their reality, right? And it's just, it is a sad thing, because they are in a war zone still. And, like, it's serious enough where, like, they don't know really what's going to happen to them from day to day. Right. But at the same time, they're very humble, very grateful people. And I think they have to be, right? They're doctors for mental health, but, like, they're also humans, right? So, like, they're seeing the impacts, and they're probably going through the same things that their patients are going through. And that was one of the other things we wanted to kind of do, was, like, maybe offer a training session for these doctors from about PTSD, and maybe, like, hone in on certain skills that they should be acquiring during this war, because they need help also. Now, even these 15 doctors, they might need their own mental health from what they're hearing, what they're seeing.
You know, the Freedom Riders and I were really honored to go to The Hague during the war tribunal about war crimes following the genocide in Bosnia-Herzegovina. And I think what we're hearing as of late is the unearthing of these horrific war crimes that are happening in these communities that the Ukrainians are trying to win back. But what is it like as a Ukrainian when you know that young men are being tortured and young women are being sexually abused every single day in your homeland?
Horrible. It's horrible. It doesn't matter where. It's just a horrible thing that happens, right? It affects my own mental health also, just because being there a year ago and everything was fine and normal, and remembering these, you know, young kids in a bar or a nightclub or the beach, And now thinking about the same kids are probably at war, and like, who knows if half of them are alive. So it's a horrible thing that they're going through. And yeah, the stories that are coming out of there are just devastating. It's like they speak the same language, eat the same food, the same culture, and now you're going and killing. And it's just, it's so mind-boggling that like humans could do that to one another. But again, history, like, it wasn't too long ago that the Holocaust happened. And that's also an event where you like can't wrap your head around, like, how can another human being do that to another human being, right? And it's like, can't wrap your head around that. And now it's the same thing. Like, how can these Russian soldiers do that to these Ukrainians? It's the same thing. It's like, for me, when I think about growing up in America, we never had a war here. We've always seen wars happen in other places, right? The war that I remember was Gulf War in the 90s, right? That was all so far away. It doesn't, you don't feel like that. And it was, and it happened so quick also. Like, it started and was over really quickly. And other conflicts, they last longer. And like this one, I think it's going to last for a while. But I think that's in the Ukrainians' favor, because the longer they hold out, the more the Russians realize that they're in shit of either, right? I mean, now they have to call up 300,000 more people. But you see on the news, a lot of them are trying to defect and leave, and a lot of them are saying, oh, but it's a hard country to do that, because now they throw you in jail for 15 years if you refuse military service. Well, I think wars are never good, and how many generations it's going to take to rebuild. I mean, physically rebuild buildings and neighborhoods and structures, that's going to take decades.
So, Lenny, one of the comments that a Holocaust survivor said to my students when they were talking about this mantra of, if we don't learn from our history, we're doomed to repeat it, was the phrase, never again. And in her lifetime, in our lifetime, it is happening. But she had a call to action. She said to my students that there's a cliche that evil prevails when good people do nothing. So her call to action was this idea that you have to stand up and speak out, but also do. So in honor of that wonderful Holocaust survivor, what is your call to action?
The name of the game is just to raise as much money as you can, right? So we're just asking people to go donate at ukrainian2.org, or you can go to Blue Check and donate there. So 300 people a week need these services to have some form of mental health. And we hope that we can continue these programs for years to come, because again, I don't think these mental health issues are going to go away anytime soon. And they're only going to resurface the longer this goes on and the more trauma that these people experience. So call to action is donate. And that will help as many people as possible with their mental health in Ukraine.
My last comment for you, Lenny, is, you know, we are recording this in the midst of the high holidays, and the power of prayer and the power of faith is on many people's minds. So I'd like to be voyeuristic, and I'd like to listen to you in your native tongue or Ukrainian or even English to say some prayer for those beautiful Ukrainians that are still home and need your services and need this war to end.
Well, I'll do it in English. To the people of Ukraine, know that there's hundreds and hundreds of people that are here with you, former Ukrainians, non-Ukrainians, Americans, people from all walks of life. We are standing by with you guys, and we are hopeful and praying every day that this terrible war comes to an end in your country. And once it does, there will be plenty of organizations that will be there to help, to build, to bring as much normalcy back to your children and to your normal life. And just know that there's a hopefully a better day tomorrow, right? The hope is that you guys are all, you know, staying strong, staying mentally strong, and will prevail. You know, Slava Ukraina.
I want to thank Lenny for his vision, his time, and for his dedication to the people of Ukraine. If you want to learn more about ukraineneedsyou.org or make a donation to their cause, please visit the website at ukraineneedsyou.org. Next, we are joined by Lawrence Bizinevier, a Ukrainian member of our Freedom Rider family. Lawrence shared with us his parents' incredible story of hardship and survival as he escaped the former Soviet Union in November of 1991. Lawrence was born in Los Angeles a month after their arrival, and the Soviet Union collapsed less than a month after his birth. As a Ukrainian who grew up in America, Lawrence hopes to use our global platform to bring more attention and awareness to the proud people of Ukraine during this devastating time. Here is my conversation with Lawrence. What I love about our Freedom Rider family is when we meet people and they get it, as our guest does. They are part of our family for the better part of forever. And so when we invited Lawrence into our lives, it was love at first sight. And when I was introduced to Lawrence in those early years, he introduced himself to me as someone whose family was from the former Soviet Union. And when this Ukrainian crisis began, I was so touched by how this story is really Lawrence's story. His family is not Russian, they are Ukrainian. So Lawrence, I'd love for you to tell our incredible audience around the globe about your birth, because the story of where you were conceived is truly a love letter to your parents, their sacrifice, their struggle, and their ingenuity to make sure that you could be a part of the American dream. So can you first and foremost say hello to our audience and then take us back to how your family went from one continent to another?
So just to start off, you're already making me very emotional, but I'll just say hello to the audience. It's a pleasure to be with you all today. Back when my mom and dad met, right before the collapse of the Soviet Union, you couldn't practice any religion in the open. It was really important for my great-grandma to have a truly traditional Jewish wedding, which meant having a chuppah at the wedding. And if anybody in the Soviet Union knew that you had one of those at your wedding, the communists would take you around the corner of a building and they would kill people for something as simple as that. But my great-grandma, she really pushed for them to have it. It was a very low-key wedding. If anyone found out that they had that there, I probably wouldn't be here today. As crazy as that sounds, that's the reality. But while my mom was pregnant, my dad was traveling all around Eastern Europe, Yugoslavia, every country that was part of the USSR. And he was just trading, buying something for a dollar, selling it for $2, just trying to make extra money. And he came back to my mom's hometown of Chernivtsi when my mom was around 6 or 7 months pregnant, and he knocks on the door, and my mom opens the door, and she's looking at him and she's like, "Can I help you?" She didn't even recognize him because he was just so dirty and beard grown out and everything. There was a Jewish refugee program at the time. It was like a lottery. You entered it, and if you got lucky, you won the lotto. But then they won the lotto. My dad was in some different city, and they're like, "You have 2 days to leave." And so he came back home, got everything that he could together. All he had saved up was $40. And they go to the airport, and my mom was 8 months pregnant with me. They knew that the military didn't allow anyone over 5 months pregnant to board the plane. And so my dad had an idea. My mom should put on a bunch of fur robes and try to hide me. And so they show up and they're kind of looking at my mom. And they asked my dad, "How many months pregnant is she?" And he was like, 5. They let them board the plane. They landed in LA. And a month later, I was born. And they came with no language, no idea of what came next. And they did it all because they wanted me to be born a US citizen. It was that important to them for me to be born here and for me to have a better life than they'd ever experienced.
Prior to Putin's war on Ukraine, I remember going to a landmark birthday of yours, and everyone spoke Russian. Everyone was drinking and dancing. I remember it was an affront to your mother that Freedom Riders and I were going to leave before 5 o'clock in the morning because you guys were going to dance the night away. And looking back in retrospect, all of that celebration and all of that culture, I now realize that everybody that was at that landmark birthday of yours were Ukrainian. And so your community probably is really hurting right now because, like you, they got the lottery ticket to come to the United States or were sponsored by family members. And so how is that community of yours who were able to leave the former Soviet Union, how are they discussing this and how are they feeling when you do have birthdays and get-togethers? Because on the nightly news, it is the breaking story every single night.
You know, my dad has a really good friend who was born in Odessa in Ukraine in the 70s. and he's completely pro-Russian. And the guy's a really smart guy. And it kind of blows my mind to hear some of the things he says. And he himself is watching Channel One, which is like the only main news channel that is broadcasted to everybody in Russia. You know, to this day, like since the war broke out, my dad and his friend, they get into it and they're really good friends. And so many times, you know, I tried to tell my dad it's just not worth it, because like sometimes you can't convince someone, especially after you try over and over and over again. But there's just always going to be people that don't agree with you about whatever it is. That doesn't mean that you still can't be friends with them. You just have to know how to change the subject or talk about something that you share commonality in. As far as like the big picture, most of our friends or family friends were on the same page. It's something that people were talking about more. But I know for me, it definitely reached a point where it was really getting to me. And I feel like a lot of people share that sentiment. My dad is staying up watching updates and, you know, military videos and analysis of what's happening, but it's hard. But everyone is united. Those that understand the situation are united, and those that think what Russia is doing and has done is warranted, I don't know if anyone will ever be able to convince them otherwise.
You know what makes me sad in retrospect for you and so many others is the Ukraine was invaded on February 24th of this year. And in the last 6 months, you had so many personal milestones. You were with us the day that our book was launched right here in Long Beach, Dear Freedom Writer. And you graduated from law school this year and you started your legal career. And at all of those landmarks, you were still really heavy. Every time we saw you and communicated, there was still, as you said, this mental burden that here are these things that I've tried so hard to bring into the world. And this other part of the world is not right, is not normal. So I know that your mental well-being has really been challenged this year. So can you talk about that for any Ukrainian, wherever they may be, whether they're in the Ukraine or outside of the Ukraine? It's hard to celebrate. It's hard to have these landmark accomplishments and not feel guilty about those who are being bombed and are suffering. So can you talk about that?
Whether it's war or some kind of illness or mental health struggle that someone is going through, sometimes you just have to, as a person, take a few steps back and look around at the people who are in your corner, who are there for you no matter what happens. So especially to those in Ukraine, I mean, the whole world is in your corner. That might not be enough to address or completely resolve the things that are happening every day, but the only way to just keep some level of mental clarity and well-being is to step outside and just like take in the sunshine. As far as friends, family, people who are just there to support me through whatever it was I was going through, I feel like if we understand that there's people who are there to lean on and to hug and to just talk to, that's what we have to do to get away from the insanity in the world.
In that sentiment, there could be somebody with Beats on or earbuds, or it's on their device or listening to this podcast. Speak directly to an ordinary person that could do an extraordinary thing to help save a life. We're promoting Ukraine Needs You, an organization to help with people's mental health on the ground. So speak directly to someone that you can encourage to do something for the Ukraine.
There's always people out there that need help. And if you're walking down the street and you see someone in trouble, if you don't help them, then you're not doing what you should do as a human being. But especially the people who are in Ukraine, it doesn't mean you have to donate $1 million. But if every single person even donated some of their time or their love, if we take what we can all do, the 6+ billion people on the planet, just spending a few minutes of your time to just go and be there for someone, that can save someone's life. I don't think it's a high bar. I really don't. Sometimes we have to make sacrifices. And sometimes it's necessary to come back to earth and just be one with all of our brothers and sisters and moms and dads and grandparents and everybody, and help in whatever way we can, no matter how big or how small.
The Jewish faith is traditionally passed through the maternal line. And so I want to go back to your mother, your grandmother, and your great-grandmother. Like, your great-grandmother wanted to get married with a chuppah and be able to practice religion within the family. Your grandma told your mother to marry your father. And then your mother made the sacrifice to leave at 8 months pregnant from the Ukraine. In honor of this maternal line of women who are bold, who are brave, who sacrifice, I want you to make an oath to them. What can you do for your people in the way that these very bold, brave women did for you?
Well, I think first I have to respond and say, after my mom moved here, well, she had been a classically trained pianist for most of her life. And she thought she would come here and either be a concert pianist or be a music teacher. But then very quickly, all during the time where my dad was waking up at 4 a.m., coming back at 8 p.m., working like a dog, just to put some bread on the table, my mom realized that I can't live out my dreams and I have to change my career path. And she became a nurse, which is not what she wanted to do, but she understood the sacrifices that she had to make and gave me the best life that I could have while sacrificing her own. And so I just want to take that sentiment and run with it. We're all here for however long we're here. Hopefully we will keep having future generations who we can continue making those sacrifices for. If we're not doing it for them, then who are we doing it for? I don't think for ourselves is the answer.
There was a salutation that you said to Liev. You embraced and you had salutations to honor the Ukraine. We often hear Ukrainian soldiers say when they take back territory that the Russians invaded. There are some rallying cries that we could leave with our audience.
The translated meaning is glory to Ukraine, glory to the heroes. And Slava is glory, but first you say glory to Ukraine, and then it's to the heroes' glory. Slava Ukraini, Героям Slava. But usually it's like 10 people and they're like yelling it, you know? The whole time we were at the Blue Check event, you kept hearing Ukrainians yelling it, because that's the phrase that really unites Ukrainians and brings that commonality and that love that is needed in those moments.
I'm so grateful to Lenny and Lawrence for sharing their stories with us. My dear listeners, may we continue to fight for justice and equality. May we continue to lift up the voices for those who are suffering. And in honor of today's guest, Lawrence and Lenny, may we all remember that we are one human family and we are all in this together. That concludes our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thank you for being a part of our Freedom Rider family. Once again, I'm your host, Aaron Gruel. This episode was produced and edited by Matt Martin Hall and Rob Falk. Until next time, dear listeners, may you write what needs to be written and tell what needs to be told.